Here comes the 330th opening of the Porcupine Petting Zoo. This is Uncle Don on CFUR at 88.7 FM in Prince George, British Columbia. An expression I've been hearing repeatedly since last year's financial collapse is age of uncertainty. Yes, we're suddenly launched into a time when the future is unpredictable. This is bullshit. Throughout human history, existence has been precarious. Our ancestors slept in trees to escape saber-toothed tigers. Once humans descended, there were the vagaries of injury, disease, floods, famine, drought, war, and the whole panoply of hardships, many threatening premature death. The only certainty in life was death. Then came the religions, promising certainty for the worthy, but only after death and on condition that the faithful support a caste of priestly folk to intervene with the gods on their behalf. Some things never change. One element of certainty that persists is that many people are gullible. To look back a year or two as a golden age of certainty is to suffer a severe clinical distortion of memory. The future has never been predictable, although we did enter a period of mass complacency after the Cold War. For decades, we'd lived with the threat of imminent immolation, a threat which receded once nuclear weapon systems came off air trigger alert. Naturally, political leaders needed a new threat to induce citizens to cleave to them for protection. Such was successfully fabricated before the World Trade Center dust settled in New York. Now people no longer look skyward for those nuclear bombs. They look under their beds for terrorists. One certainty we can count on is that those in political power under any system will find, or fabricate, a threat against which they alone can protect their people. The next time you hear some commentator refer to the current era as a time of uncertainty, emulate that good congressman for South Carolina and shout, "You lie." Mothers Against Drunk Drivers, or MAD, has surfaced again, this time cheering a proposal by Harper's controllers to change the laws allowing cops to force random breath tests upon drivers. In countries where this has been permitted, it supposedly reduced accidents involving alcohol by a third. Oh yes, it's admitted that such random stops and intrusions into our privacy violate our charter rights, but that reductions in deaths justify ignoring our rights. As founder and sole member of DAM, or Drunkards Against Mad Mothers, I object. Worthy as this proposal may seem on its face, it's just another chip off the rock of Canadians' rights and freedoms. Ever since the Charter was instituted, it's been undermined by governments, always, of course, in the interests of that elusive public safety. This accelerated rapidly after certain events of September 2001 in a foreign country, followed by a couple of wars against a will-o'-the-wisp called global terrorism. Habeas corpus, a right with centuries of history, is gone with preventive detention legislation. Privacy rights are minimized, as snoops can now monitor our every communication. And so it goes as we are increasingly watched and controlled. If police can stop anyone at any time to inflict a breath test, what will flow from that? If they claim to see something suspicious, a decidedly subjective decision, may they demand us to search the vehicle? You betcha. Go through your personal possessions? Sure. How about checking that nasty for what nasty images might be on your computer? You never know. Got any seeds in your pockets? Let's check it out. Dirty underwear? Worth a look. How far can this crack in the door of our legal rights be open? Do we value safety over charter rights? We could be safer by allowing random inspections of homes and businesses. Let the cops come in at will and see what you've been up to. They would surely find some illicit plants in basements, dirty pictures on computers, unregistered guns, stolen merchandise. Will you sacrifice your privacy for more law and order? How about mandatory identification cards? This idea has been a signature of repressive regimes everywhere. When I turned 18, I was forced to apply for a draft card. This piece of cardboard contained the warning that failure to carry it at all times could result in fine and imprisonment. This obligation was enforced selectively against radicals who objected to draconian laws, like the one on carrying cards. The most audacious objectors publicly burned their cards, and many were prosecuted. Will Canadians see the day when stormtroopers stop us on the streets demanding, "Your papers, please"? Today it is drivers who will be randomly stopped and searched. What next? Canada's federal government is willing to ignore our charter rights in order to catch drinking drivers. If such basic rights are flexible, why not the following? Quote, Every citizen of Canada has the fundamental freedom of conscience and religion. We have a Criminal Code section number 293, which unambiguously prohibits, quote, any kind of conjugal union with more than one person at the same time, whether or not it is by law recognized as a binding form of marriage. What part of this law doesn't British Columbia's Attorney General understand? We've allowed a Mormon sect in Bountiful, B.C. to violate this criminal code provision blatantly for years behind the cover of their charter right to freedom of religion. When freedom of religion is allowed to be used as a cover for polygamy, our government's opening the door to any number of perverse practices by religions. Say, why not excuse Bishop Leahy for possession of child pornography? Sexual exploitation of children has been practiced openly in past centuries by clergy, so doesn't this deserve protection under the charter? If a cult practices slavery, sacrifice of virgins, or cannibalism, might these be protected from prosecution as religious sacraments? When we allow a self-professed religion to violate the laws of Canada behind a veil of religious freedom, we open ourselves to horrors we could live to regret. Good news. According to the head spokesman for Afghanistan's puppet army, they will be ready to take over their own security operations free of foreigners by 2013, give or take a year. Was this statement to the press a less than subtle way of pressuring Harper's Tories to hang in there with our mission behind the self-imposed deadline of 2011? Another few hundred thousand foreign soldiers, another few billion dollars to slosh around and be expropriated by Afghan leaders, and the alien soldiers can leave. And with them will go those corrupt leaders and their ill-gotten gains to settle peacefully in safer lands with their families while the abandoned homeland goes to hell. The Afghan army claims to have 96,000 men under arms, but many of them are just names on a roster whose pay of $70 a month is siphoned off by officials. Men come in for training, take their enlistment money and guns, then disappear, only to reappear under an alias to claim training money and guns yet again. Meanwhile, money is appropriated under both names, and the phantom is counted as an active soldier. No one in the West wants to expose the emperor's nakedness. Everyone has a stake in maintaining the fiction that the ongoing war, mission, is succeeding. It is not, and it will not. When the whole fiasco collapses, fingers will be pointed, recriminations made, and we will be set up for the next stupid, unwinnable military intervention where we are unwanted. Part of our propaganda effort in the Afghan mission is the inviting, twice yearly, of relatives of slain soldiers to Afghanistan. As long as they say and write nice things about the war and their support for it, invitations will continue. The latest trick is to have visitors write letters to their dead husbands, fathers, and lovers who took the bullet or bomb in defense of liberty, justice, and the right of little girls to attend school before being sold off to lecherous old men. If I had lost a close relative in a useless invasion and occupation of a foreign land, I would not be supporting the action that took him or her away. I'd be speaking out, but then I would miss the lavish semi-annual hospitality of those who oversaw my loss. I spent over 3 years in the U.S. Army and was never promoted above private first class. I've several rationalizations I used to explain this, but the bare truth is that I was not a good soldier. I found a desk job where I could hide while biding my time. I see where Canadian soldiers whose advancements are stalled have a new ploy for advancement. They can die. Private Jonathan Cotier, the 131st Canadian victim, was posthumously promoted to corporal. What kind of military madness does this represent? In the United States government, there's an ongoing debate between hawks and doves on the future of the Afghan war. Excuse me, there I go again. Mission. Over 100,000 foreign soldiers are now stationed in that country, and generals are asking for as many as 60,000 more Americans. This is the way the Vietnam War, not mission, gradually saw 500,000 Yankee soldiers in that benighted nation. Is Afghanistan headed that way? Fortunately, I guess there are also doves with some influence on Obama's decisions. That was the good news. Here comes the bad. These are the doves. Vice President Joe Biden is opposed to combat troop escalation in Iraq or Afghanistan. He wants foreigners to train Afghan forces to take over the war on the ground while increasing assassination of al-Qaeda and Taliban leaders on the ground and from the air by Predator drones and Hellfire missiles. James Jones, national security advisor, opposes huge increases in ground forces. He wants more options to be considered. The Democratic chairman of the Senate Armed Services Committee, Carl Levin, wants no more troops sent. Congressman John Murtha, another Democrat, opposes more combat troops, stressing comparisons with President Johnson's Vietnam quagmire. Now, what's wrong with this picture? None of them opposes and proposes ending the war. If doves don't advocate a halt to the killing and destruction, who does? Commentators have roped off the field of acceptable discussion between escalation on the hawk side and a troop freeze on the dove side. This leaves those who advocate a withdrawal beyond the fringe. It's a familiar tactic of setting boundaries to what is considered reasonable and alienating other options. There are many, like me, who would like to see a return of all foreign soldiers and mercenaries from Afghanistan as soon as transport could be arranged. The Afghans do not want us there, except for those who profit financially or politically from being a de facto colony. For those who fear a return of the Taliban, their fundamentalist supporters and warlords, we could offer sanctuary, leaving the remainder to stew in their own juices. Let that corrupt bastard Karzai and his allies face the wrath of the Taliban. They're no friends of ours. So if I'm not a dove, what am I? Would it be appropriate for those advocating ending the war to be called owls? Be careful when you confront a federal cop. Be very careful. Do not appear agitated, no matter the provocation. Do not hold anything in your hand, even if it's as innocuous as, say, a stapler. Either of these elements can earn you repeated jolts from electric guns, possibly resulting in death. These are lessons for the public coming from the Zakansky inquiry. In spite of his facing four fully armed cops, no effort was made to communicate with this man. He was electrocuted as he stood, then zapped four more times as he lay on the ground. Although cops denied it, he was then choked. If it hadn't been for the amateur video of the assault, the cops' version of events would have sailed through the inquiry unchallenged. According to RCMP lawyers, Zakansky deserved to die on the floor of Vancouver's International Airport. Why? Well, because he was a smoker and supposedly an alcoholic. He suffered high blood pressure to boot. The force had to send folks to Poland at public expense to obtain this information. So remember, if you should be killed by an overzealous cop, your life will be examined to determine why it was your fault. Did you smoke? Did you drink? Did you have any medical conditions? How about metal tooth fillings? They could have contributed to your electronic death. There have been other law enforcement agencies free to brutalize citizens with impunity. I need not enumerate them. The question we must address is whether, in the name of nebulous security, we wish to emulate them. What a relief it was for Canada's spy agencies. A court has cleared their right to keep watch on Canadian citizens when on foreign soil. Agents were formerly stymied, at least legally, in attempts to keep tabs on our every action when overseas. Now, if they're suspicious about your holiday in Hawaii, they can read your letters, your email, your Twitters, your Googling. They can bug your hotel room, photograph your beach excursions, the whole bit. After all, you might do something or meet someone dangerous. Canadians haven't as much knowledge of our secret services as do Americans of theirs, but we can assume they operate similarly. According to an article in the New York Times by William Sapphire, here's what the so-called Homeland Security Act opened up for their paranoids. Quote, every purchase you make with a credit card, every magazine subscription you buy, and medical prescription you fill, every website you visit and email you send or receive, every academic grade you receive, every bank deposit you made, every trip you book, and every event you attend. Unquote. Add to this information the U.S. government already has on citizens, passport data, driver's license information, judicial records, and any information the police and FBI might possess, military and social security records, and all of those times you appeared on surveillance cameras. Canadian officials have the ability to create a profile on anyone using similar sources. Some people tell me they have nothing to hide, so they don't care what governments know about them. Well, governments have been known to change direction in a hurry. Ask a German who lived there in the 30s. Ask a Honduran in that country today. What they know can come and bite you in the butt one day. This is CFUR at 88.7 FM in Prince George, British Columbia. In the flurry of American national paranoia following an incident involving aircraft hitting certain buildings, Admiral Poindexter, the brains behind the Iran-Contra affair, saw an opening for a pet project. He convinced the Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency to fund something he dubbed Total Information Awareness under his direction. His new agency was called the Information Awareness Office. Before this Orwellian office was defunded by Congress, it embarked on a number of projects which continued under separate cover today. One was called Effective Affordable Reusable Speech-to-Text, or EARS. It aimed to create a system to translate everyday speech in multiple languages to text, making written records of tapped telephone and broadcast conversation available for screening. This aided surreptitious eavesdropping. Evidence extraction and link discovery was a project to detect patterns across various media of communication. Other pursuits were esoteric in nature, aimed mostly at processing vast quantities of information into usable form for ferreting out suspicious activities, communication, or intention. An insidious project was Human Identification at a Distance, or HID. Using biometric identification technologies, it was successful in making possible remote recognition of individuals at a distance of 150 meters. It uses facial and gait characteristics to spot people via radar, visible, and infrared light. This system has been used successfully to find European football hooligans in crowds of fans. It could easily be adapted to recordings and surveillance cameras to identify and trace the movements of a subject throughout a city. Critics believe that massive information aggregation and analysis technology are a grave threat, considering the record of Nixon's COINTELPRO program to disrupt his political foes. Today's enhanced abilities have a potential for disaster. A strong system of surveillance is a necessary component of a strong totalitarian state. Just look at the dossiers East Germany Stasi was able to accumulate with relatively crude tools. For me, it boils down to the question of whether I trust Stephen Harper and his control freaks. And do I have confidence in future Canadian governments to mind their own business? You figure it out. Stephen Harper sidestepped the chore of attacking carbon pollution by adopting aspirational goals of reduction. This can be interpreted as Tinkerbell thinking. If you wish for it, it will come true. But I don't intend to attack our worthy leader yet again. Not now. Harper's aspirational idea has spread abroad, notably to Sweden, where the Nobel Committee awarded its annual peace prize to Barack Hussein Obama. What has this new president done to materially promote peace? Not much, if anything. He talks a good battle, but he has yet to throw the weight of his office into solid action. Suppose President Obama sincerely wanted to promote world peace, putting his money where his mouth is. What might he do? He could cut funding for America's massive war machine to match real threats. There's so much fat in it that halving it would be easy. Obama could tell his soldiers, mercenaries, and hangers-on in Iraq to pack their bags as the country has been liberated and its fate will henceforth be in their own hands. All American bases, including most of the green zone beyond the American embassy compound, could be returned to Iraqis. He could likewise tell Afghans they must prepare to take control of their own country. American reconstruction teams would operate only in areas where requested by indigenous leaders and where they would be protected by local forces. Afghan's choice. He could begin to dismantle most of the 700-plus American military installations now planted on foreign soil. Most have no role in defense of United States territory. He could freeze all recruiting into the American forces while canceling contracts with mercenary companies. He could begin to reduce the American Navy by scrapping its oldest and most obsolete ships first. He could unilaterally begin eliminating nuclear weapons and delivery systems, leading other nations to reduce their arsenals. He could halt all aid to nations which had developed nuclear weapons in violation of the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty. This would specifically hit Israel, Pakistan, India, and North Korea. He could furthermore tell Israel that it must abandon all colonies, called settlements, on Palestinian land. They must tear down their apartheid wall on stolen land. failure to do so immediately would result in American troops doing these tasks for them. With pressure relieved on Arabs and other Muslims, he could begin to rescind the more onerous aspects of his homeland security monstrosity. Peace with Muslims would reduce the need to fear terrorists who would be bereft of motives for violence. So if Obama is the pacifist that the Nobel Committee thinks he is, we could have a more livable world for all. I have been vindicated. I've said for years that Harper's promise to end Canada's mission in Afghanistan in 2011 was hot air. He's now admitted as much. In a typical twist of the English language, he stated that the military mission of Canada will end in that year, but the Canadian soldiers will remain in the country indefinitely. They will be there, supposedly, without a mission. A military without a mission is ceremonial and useless. Harper says that our military will be there not for combat, for training, but for training and construction. Well then, if Canadians will not be in Afghanistan to fight, why soldiers? After 10 years of occupation and, supposedly, our training of their soldiers, does Harper admit that the Afghan army will still be unable to train their own? Who's better able to lay sewers, dig wells, and build schools, soldiers or construction workers? If there's no role for fighting, why soldiers? We should pull our soldiers out of Afghanistan while offering professional help with construction for any village, town, or province that can provide their own protection for our workers. This would be an incentive for Afghans who really want progress to stop relying on foreign firepower. Buy an overpriced item at the misnamed Save-On Foods and earn points on your affinity card. Save up 1 million points and select a shiny prize. Pay exorbitant prices for cramped seats on airplanes and win free miles. Grocery stores and airlines aren't the only ones with point systems rewarding frequent buyers and frequent flyers. Squander your paycheck at the local casino and earn frequent sucker points. In British Columbia, these points won't get you to Hawaii or allow you to select a kitchen gadget. They pay off in cash. Admittedly, it's your cash, but what the hell? In 2007-2008, BC's casinos bribed their customers with gifts of $23 million. Cashable points are only granted to high rollers, like those poor idiots who mortgage the family home to feed the slots. I guess the theory is that the loser should always have bus fare home so he doesn't camp on the premises. At least BC's system for returning some of the loser's money is more straightforward than other provinces. Some give regulars theater tickets, gourmet foods, hotel rooms, limousine service, and stuff to make them feel important and keep them coming back. At one time, gamblers could feel they were not just shoveling money down a rat hole. Recall that gambling was legalized on condition that losers would be financing community services. Campbell has now cut sports and cultural organizations loose, reneging on written agreements promising funds. Losers' money will now go straight into general revenue. When you buy that lottery ticket or feed that slot, rest assured that your losses guarantee that the rich will not have to pay their share of financing the government, which serves their interests so handsomely. Stephen Harper's project to eliminate our Senate is transparent. He cannot attack the institution head-on, as dissolution would require the consent of that very same Senate and changes to our Constitution. So he must undermine and discredit the institution so people would demand its elimination. In violation of his own policies, he's been stacking the institution with political hacks, all of whom pledged to resign after 8 years. Expect these pledges to be honored only if we should have a conservative prime minister 8 years hence. May the gods help us. In order to assure that the Canadian public will be ready for the future junking of the Senate, Harper avoided appointees who were too competent. With a bunch of clueless bums filling seats in that other place, Canadians will be all too ready to see the end of it, root and branch. He even went so far as to appoint a blatantly tainted and incompetent. One stands accused of mishandling finances as previous head of the Congress of Aboriginal Peoples. Another, formerly a big league hockey coach, admits to being challenged in reading skills. Yes, we now have a senator who is functionally illiterate. Just the kind of person needed to consider legislative bills in the parliamentary branch of sober second thought. Way to go, Stephen. Complain about the institution, then plot to destroy it from within, you slippery bugger. Canadians, workers in Canada, are subjected to a constant barrage of propaganda which most don't comprehend. From all fronts, they're told they cannot rely on traditional defined benefit company pensions. One CEO of a large outfit, a man whose pension entitlements are quite secure, made the following statement, quote, "The pension gap is a huge dilemma, but the only solution is for individuals to take responsibility for their own retirement planning and saving. Many people have been let off the hook because they don't have to worry about it. Well, life has changed," close quote. Yes, life has changed, and we're not supposed to ask how or why. The situation's not complex. It's outrageously simple. Corporations accepted deferred obligations without funding them. This fiduciary lapse was allowed and often encouraged by governments. These life-has-changed executives divert attention from the basic fact that a pension is a deferred wage payable after retirement. It's not a gift, but a prepaid asset. A company promising a pension has a duty to see these funds are set aside in the present, which will be available when promised. They've not done this, instead speculating with these funds or using them for current operations. Governments have allowed this lapse of duty, and workers are now expected to bite the bullet. Our government is complicit in this fraud, and the burden of funding pensions should be laid on the doorsteps of those who benefit from the lapse. Perhaps the likes of that corporate executive who said life has changed should have his own fortune in retirement benefits tapped first to make up the shortfall in his company plan. After all, we can tell him, life has changed, suck it up. Sorry, community service is an amateur sport. The provincial government has no gambling funds for you. Sorry, school children, your families and teachers, the provincial government has no money to reduce class sizes, initiate full-day kindergarten, or repair school buildings. Sorry, government employees, we have to fire some of you and freeze the wages of the rest. The cupboard is empty. Oh, by the way, folks, we did manage to find enough money at the bottom of the sock to send three members of the Union of BC Municipalities to Athens, where they will bear witness to the lighting of the son of Hitler's Olympic torch. This Campbell announced at the close of a meeting where he told the organization there was no money available to share with BC municipalities. What's wrong with this picture? This concludes the 330th opening of my Porcupine Petting Zoo on CFUR at 88.7 FM in Prince George. The following is a personal ad printed in the San Francisco Bay Guardian. Please respond to the Guardian yourself if this attracts you. Jerk seeks chick. Stupid, lazy, insensitive, insecure SWM seeks SWF. I hate the arts, travel, reading, and anything new. I love sitting, sleeping, drinking beer, and TV. You are a former cheerleader with a lobotomy, earn $110,000, and would like nothing more than spending a nice romantic evening at my home cleaning and doing laundry.